I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And we are very happy to welcome back to our studios today someone. I think it's been a couple years, Galen. We were talking before the session. Yeah. That has it been that long?
But time flies.
Well, I think you've just been really busy. Galen Lee is here. Welcome, Galen.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back.
Thanks so much for coming. And one of the reasons we're having you here is because you just released a new album, your third full length, right? It's called
Yep.
Learning How to Stay.
Mm-hmm.
Big release show happened on Saturday, and we weren't able to sneak in before the show, but I think it was a big success. I was there. It seemed pretty awesome to me.
It was really fun. Yeah, that was really fun.
And so you said, yeah, you'll come in and talk about the album afterwards. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the new album.
Cool.
And hopefully you'll sneak in some local shows while you're back in town for a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'm doing the Dovetail Cafe sometime in January. Working on confirming the dates.
Okay.
Then I'm going to be in the Astor Cafe in Minneapolis on the 29th of November. So opening for Jeremy Yildesacker. So some local-ish shows.
Nice.
Before we hit the road again.
Nice. Well, why don't I have you get started with a song? What do you want to start with here?
This is called I Wait, and it's a tune that I wrote about taking the disability rights movement seriously. It was on the new album with a full band, so it's a little different. This is the solo version. So here we go. No service, still I am hoping for a sign that one day things will change and we can finally take our place, that history won't forget us or try to minimize our pain, and so I wait. Not realize all of the small ways I am not welcome, but just take a look around. Still, everybody knows that you need a place to go, and living isn't easy if you incinerate your home, and so I stay. I may seem angry, so please forgive me, but I am still not free in this society. How long must we keep fighting for our right to be wrongs overdue for writing. We're a bit too forgiving. So if you hear them make claims of progress, take a good look and see who isn't there. We need a seat now at the table, so please invite us, or don't pretend to care.
Galen Lee, live from Studio A, and that is a song from her brand new album, Learning How to Stay, and one of the new ones, and that one kind of fits in with the work you do as a disability rights activist.
Yeah.
And as you've traveled more and you've been more done more touring, are there places where it's better? Are there places where it's more difficult for you as an artist?
Yeah, I mean, all over the United States, it's just like a kind of a wide variety. It's because of the way the ADA is written, private businesses are pretty inconsistent. You know, like some are really good and the owners are really enthusiastic about making sure they are accessible and they really want the shows to feel welcoming to everybody. And some places just don't have that same motivation. So I'm trying to find the places that really care about equal access, even though it is technically the law and it should just be that way. Anyways, it's not, you know, it's pretty inconsistent. The only country that was really great, like transportation-wise, we went to Switzerland, and that was awesome. But even there, there's old buildings and people don't modify. And then sometimes you find these old buildings that are modified. So it's not like just because a building's old, mm-hmm. you can't make it accessible, but it's just a matter of how much the people involved really want it to be welcoming. You know what I mean? So it's just a whole lot of inconsistency is what I've found.
Well, and even when people have a willing spirit, they might just not think about it, perhaps.
Yeah. And I mean, finances are an issue, too. Mm-hmm. But just not knowing is a big part of the thing. I mean, a lot of people will be like, oh, my venue is accessible. And then they'll look at it and they'll be like, oh, actually, I didn't realize there are two steps. And I never thought about those.
Right.
You know? And they literally just never had that realization. And so it's not that every venue who isn't accessible doesn't care. They really might not understand what they need to do to be truly welcoming and accessible to people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what why I talk about it so much.
Mm-hmm.
That song in particular, I Wait, was written because I feel like in social justice work, people with disabilities get left out a lot too. You know, where every race, every class, every gender, people with disabilities are all over the spectrum, but they're not usually represented in the way that I think they should be or taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a rally. Well, is the rally at an accessible place? You know, like making sure that you're thinking of people with disabilities when you're trying to change other issues, because we should all be fighting for each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, for positive change. And that's what that song is about to mm-hmm. me.
Wonderful. Well, it's a wonderful album, and there are new songs like that one. There are a few that you redid. As you mentioned, you have a full band on this album.
Yeah.
And is this the first time that you've had a full band all the way through? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been in albums like that. Snowbarn album was a full band, but that wasn't really my project. So this is the first time where I was, like, directing and helping to produce. I co-produced it with Al Church and Dave Mailing, and then Alan Sparhawk came in and did some producing as well, and so it was a really big team effort, and I'm glad that it was like that for my first full band album, because I really wanted to make sure I had the resources and, like, knowledge of all these people that are really good at what they do, and then I could learn as I went, and it was really, really fun.
Yeah, and so Dave, I think we've talked about him before. He's a nice Duluth boy originally,
mm-hmm.
and he's got his own projects, but he's been in your band for a little while here.
Yep.
And he actually has traveled, I think, the most with you. And
Al Church has done some too.
Okay, another nice Duluth boy.
Yep, I know. I like the nice Duluth boys. I know. I really wanted to, like, I started playing with Al first, actually.
Okay.
Al Church, and we call him Al too because of Alan Sparhawk. So Al, too, started playing with him first.
Because he played with Al Sparhawk first in Murder of Crows.
That's why
Al
1.
Yeah, so he's Al 1. And
then Al 2 is Al Church. And we were doing stuff, but he couldn't do this one gig. And I was like, well, I need a guitar player, because it was a gig where they really wanted a guitar player. And Alan Sparhawk wasn't available either. So I was like, well, you know who I've never played with is Dave Mailing. And I've always, like, respected his work, and he's super talented. And so he did the show, and I was like, oh, no. now I like playing with two guitar players. What do I do? And then it dawned on me that they play multiple instruments. Like, both of them are great at piano and can do drums and, like, guitar, obviously. And so I was like, man, that would be a fun trio to work on a project with, that, like, the three of us, like, together. But Davis traveled the most, probably. He went on the album release tour in September. He's been to the UK a couple times with me, and we're going again in December. But Al Church and I did South by Southwest a couple of years ago, and we went out to Iceland this summer. I try to divvy it up because, like, they're both really cool, and I can't usually bring both of them with me. So, but Dave has a little more flexibility in his schedule, so, and he's awesome. I mean, they both are. It's really, there's no who's better than who. They're just, like, both so great. I really like working with both of them.
And at the release show, you had Martin Dosh on drums, I think. And then you had, who was on bass?
Bo Jeffrey. He's in Dave Mayling's band, The Fontenelles.
Oh, right.
On the album, it was a guy named Andrew Foreman. And he still does shows with us when he can. But he's in, like, Nookie Jones and Reina Del Cid. He's really, really busy. So he couldn't do the show. And Bo is available. And he's great. Marty Dosh was the drummer on the album. So he did a great job.
So that was kind of the full band that worked on the album, minus the bass player, just a different bass player.
And then minus Alan Sparhawk. And then we had a ton of special guests, like Haley Bonner was on three different tracks. Mike Lewis was on saxophone on a couple. Bob Boylan contributed some static noises. Like,
and Bob is the, he's from NPR Music, and he's the guy that runs the Tiny Desk Concert Contest, right?
Yep, and he... I was telling him, like, he sent me some of his music to listen to, and I was like, oh, that's cool. I really like the static on this one track. And he's like, that's all me. And I was like, you know, I have an album coming out, and there's one track where I want there to be noise, not just music. And he's like, well, send it to me. So he offered to do it, and it was really fun to, like, collaborate. We sent it back and forth over email, like, not quite like this, but a little more like this.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was fun. And then there's a theremin player. We did the same thing. He lives in London, and did it all over email, which the technology is so crazy now that you can do things like across the world and still be in somebody's album. It's really fun.
Now, which track was were those both on the same track, the static and the theremin? Or those different tracks?
No, the theremin's on Grace in a Tender Hand, which is an old song that I re-recorded. And then the static is on a new song called The Last 3 Feet.
Okay.
And it's kind of at the intro and the outro.
And so when you're in, it sounds like you had fun kind of envisioning these songs with the band and with, you know, other elements than just you and your fiddle. So do you kind of get a picture in your mental audio picture when you're putting these songs together, or how did that work?
Yeah, I mean, it was really collaborative. So I'm not going to pretend like I thought of everything. I mean, there's some saxophone on Someday Will Linger in the Sun, which I would never have thought of. But Dave was like, trust me, at least try it. And if you hate it, we can take it out. And it was really cool. And I was like, okay. So some of those ideas came from, like, Dave and Al. But, yeah, sometimes I was like, I don't have the terminology because I don't play guitar and I don't play drums. But I'd be like, I hear outer space or I hear the apocalypse. And we would talk about what that could sound like. And so most of it was like a description of a vibe, and that's how we went for it. But like on Grace in the Tender Hand with the theremin part, I really heard this up high. I was thinking it could be a saw, and Dave's like, well, you know, Richard, our friend, plays theremin, and that kind of has the same real high, like, eerie sound, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, let's see if that works. And so it was like a real back and forth, but it was super fun to have all this big palette ahead of you. It's almost overwhelming because you're like, I could have so many sound effects, but then you want to keep it like to the point of the song.
Right.
But I think we did a pretty good of editing out. We took a lot of things out too. Like, we kind of threw everything at it and then pared it away and ended up with something that I'm really happy with. Like, I really was pumped at the way it turned out at the end.
It is really nice. And I like that. You mentioned Someday We'll Linger in the Sun, which is just a beautiful song that is the one that you submitted to the Tiny Desk Concert Contest that won you the contest. And originally, and when you first recorded it, too, it was very very straight ahead, and you and your fiddle, and just really simple and beautiful. And to hear that one fleshed out, it's such a different version, and it brings something completely different out of the song, I think.
Yeah. You know what's kind of funny about that one is when I first wrote it, I wasn't doing my looping in the same way that I am now. Like, I was not as good at it yet, so Al Sparhawk played guitar. And that was more of the vibe. The one that we put out on the new album was a little more close to the the vibe of the way it was originally played. And then I decided I wanted to learn how to do it solo so that I could do it at shows. And it had to change a lot because of just the way the necessity of the looping pedal. And it became this real mournful, like, pared down piece, which I love to play too. But when I knew I wanted to put it on another album, I didn't want it to sound the same as the other recording. So I was like, well, we should just do it, kind of go back to the original intent, which was a little more of like a rock song.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. But it changed a lot, too, even then. Like, we added in a lot of things that kind of fleshed it out even more than what Alice Barhawk and I had done. But it was fun to keep that energy, like kind of push that energy into it, because mm-hmm. that's how it was when we first wrote it.
Oh, that's really interesting. Because, it really does. Like, I was like, hey, I'm kind of nodding my head when you were playing it at the show. Like, this song is rocking now.
Yeah, you know, somebody called it a banger in England. And I was like, well, yeah, kind of. But it's not what people think of when they hear, like, you know, it's not the one that I entered. But it's, mm-hmm. that's the energy that I had in my head when I first wrote it and showed it to Alan. That's kind of what we had translated it to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and it also gives you options, because I'm assuming there are still times like right now where you're playing by yourself.
Yep.
And so you need to have solo versions of these tunes. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to kind of have the option of doing it either way, I suppose.
Yeah. One thing I learned about most, I think, in the recording studio is the idea that music is really mutable, like changeable. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, the solo version of I Wait is completely different than the band version, but if you have the same mental imagery while you're singing it, it can still translate as a different song, and I think a lot of songs can do that. I mean, that's why the cover song works, right? Because you're taking your own energy and putting it into a new song, and I like to try to find ways to loop. I can't loop every single song that's on that album, unfortunately, but I want to keep trying to find new ways to do them so that I can perform a lot of them mm-hmm. solo, just because of the challenge. And then, like, growing as an artist, I think it's important to, like, think of a song in as many different angles as you can. But then also, just the necessity of doing them solo sometimes. I love bringing people with us, but it's not a reality 100% of the time.
Right.
And so I try to, like, save it for the big stuff I bring them. And then when it's, like, smaller shows or an obscure place, and I can do them solo, and it's fun too. Mm-hmm. And it's a different connection with the audience, so I like that. I like the variety.
Yeah.
Changing it up.
Well, and it keeps it all fresh,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially now that you've been out touring so much the last couple of years, and you've been playing these songs so much, I imagine. And
yeah,
must be nice to keep them, you know, have ways to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear another tune. And what do you want to play next?
I think I'm going to do the newest song that I wrote. It's not on the album, because it's a little bit too new for that, but it's called The Long Way Around, and I'm hoping to record it this winter and put it out sometime next year, so it's good to practice it. So here we go. Thank you. when two souls meet and the whole world feels new, shared moment sweet, all covers bright and true, and there is laughter and there are good things growing everywhere. And I'm happy to be in this place with you. And I'm happy to be in this place. Let it out, you laid it all across the table. What's this about? And you're making me unstable, and I don't want to go down this road with you. No, I don't want to go down this road. I want to go, but I can't, and I won't. All learn up the wounds that I broke open with you, 'cause I knew and I chose, and I don't feel at home in this world anymore. No, I don't feel at home in this world. Without the landing, and we learn to keep our hearts in time, try not to burn the careful ties that bind us together. And I'm taking the long way around with you, and I'm taking the long way around. And I'm happy to be in this place with you. And I'm taking the long way around.
Galen Lee, live from Studio A, the Long Way Around song that is not on the new album. I think at your show you said it missed the album by about a month.
Yeah, it was like, oh, should we try to squish it in? But it doesn't really fit the theme of the album anyways. I kind of want to start with a fresh... Now everything I've written has basically been recorded up until this date. So I really want to, like, focus on just what do I want to do now, you know? And this album felt like a different chapter, so or this song, this last one. So I just kind of do something a little bit different with the message or the theme.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what would you, how would you describe the theme of the album that you just put out?
Well, it's called Learning How to Stay, because I feel like every song, if you boil it down, has something to do with being in the present moment, and, like, whether or not that's just, like, appreciating the positives or going through the negative without shirking away and trying to block what's happening. I think they are both addressed in there, but that's sort of the overall theme of the album. And I think I just felt like this one didn't really fit in that exact way. So I just kind of wanted to put it out in a different time. So yeah.
One thing I like about the album, even though you have all the, you know, the band and all these more fleshed out arrangements, and some, you know, kind of a pop feel to a lot of the stuff, I love that you still have a couple of fiddle tunes on there.
Yeah.
And including the Finnish one that you described at your show as a kind of apocalyptic sounding.
Yeah.
tell me about that one. I think it was, you said it was inspired by a student of yours. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a traditional tune. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly not ever played the way that I play it. And that's the last one I'm going to do for you today. And I really love it, though. It's a melody that I heard many, many years ago. But then I had this one student that, her name is Rachel Johnson, and she's great. And she... it's just like obsessed with Scandinavian music, and so I brought that one in for her, and it kind of reminded me how much I loved it. But she would bring me music all the time, and we'd be like sight reading in lessons, which I hate sight reading, so it was like, but I loved her, so it was like always fun to do. But sight reading is like nerve-wracking when you're like supposed to be the teacher, and you're like, but I've never even seen this song, you know what I mean? So we would sight read all this Scandinavian music, so I brought her this one. And it kind of reminded me how much I liked it. I had heard it a long time ago, and I decided to try to figure out a way to loop it, but it really changed the energy. Usually it's like a beautiful, sad, mournful song with like an accordion and a violin. That's how I've heard it played. And then I decided to make it kind of like a rock ballad. Mm-hmm. Fiddle tune. I mean, it's not one. Mm-hmm. Yes, traditional. I think that's what's so fun about fiddle music for me, is that you can really reinvent it and keep the traditional melody so that people recognize it, but do it in a completely new fashion, and it kind of brings this different life to the old tunes. I mean, there are some traditionalists that do not agree with like messing with it, right? But I'm obviously not that, so.
Well, and that's, you know, kind of the tradition of folk music is that it changes through the years as it's passed down. So I think you're just being a traditionalist in your own way.
Yes, maybe that's true. Well, I mean, I think it's cool how long they've made it. I mean, those melodies are awesome. And that's why they're still around. You know, the folk, especially the traditional fiddle tune melodies, they're all great. And that, you know, there's not a lot of melodies that we hear 200 years later and still identify with or love. And that's what makes a great song. And so all the fiddle tunes that have made it this far are there for a reason, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's more fiddle tunes out there that kind of just died away because they weren't as cool, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of cool, you have done so many things in the last since the last time you were here. I don't even know where to begin. You've done a lot of traveling. You've been to Finland, which did you perform there?
In the Nordic Art Festival.
Oh, that must have been amazing.
It was so fun, and it was for all the time we were there.
Oh.
So it was nutsky. We stayed up till 5 one morning just to try it, and we like were walking back from the hotel. We weren't even really partying. We were just like hanging out with people, but we decided, well, we might as well see what it's not. Have it ever get dark, and we were walking back to our hotel, and it looked like the streets were empty, and we turned a corner, and there's a hot dog stand, and there's, like, hundreds of people still up, because, I mean, it's, like, that's the culture in the summer. It's, like, you are out, and you are enjoying the lack of darkness, like, to the max, and it was so cool, and everyone's just eating hot dogs and chatting it up on the street corner or whatever. And
at 5 a.m.
Yeah, at 5 a.m. And I was like, oh, my gosh, no one else went to bed either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was really fun.
And you went to Switzerland.
Yeah.
And you got to go to Paris. That sounds like, I think you performed in Switzerland, not in France, but you got to go to France, which was...
Yeah, I would love to perform there someday. That's sort of a big dream of mine. But I looked at a map, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it's only a 4-hour train ride. And I took French all through high school, and just a big French lover. I don't know why. It's just like the culture that I think is so cool, and I really wanted to see it in real life. I'd been to Montreal a couple times, which I also love, but I really wanted to see Paris. And my husband liked it as much as I did. That was the thing, is I was like, this is a dream. Was it cool if we do it? And then we both just really loved it there. It was so chill. We'd sit on the river and have some wine and, you know, bread and cheese, and sit and just like watch people go by in boats, and it was so relaxing.
Nice.
It was really fun.
Well, and then you've played a bunch of festivals. You played at Winnipeg for the first time this year.
Yeah, I talked to you guys there.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. And then you got to be on the Decemberists album. They brought you in to play fiddle on a song, right?
Yep, yep.
So tell me about that experience.
That was so... They're my favorite band from college, so I've always, like, you know, I was, like, a big fan. And so I met Chris Funk right when we started touring, right before we left, actually, because he did a documentary called Great Big Story on some musicians that he had followed, so he wanted to do a little 2-minute clip or whatever with me. And so I met him way back then, and then every time I would come out to Portland, I'd been out there twice, he would sit in with me, which was really cool. Like, he's a guitarist and multi-instrumentalist, and so he would sit in with me in Portland for a couple songs, not for like the whole set or whatever. He'd do a few with me, and then the next day after a set, he texted me and said, what are you doing right now? And I'm like, not much. I don't have a show until 5. And he's like, do you want to be on our new album? And I was like, yes, I will be right there. So, like, I got ready super fast and just, like, got a cab. And we went there and met the whole band, which I wasn't expecting either. And they were really nice. And then a couple of months later, I got to open for them, actually, in St. Paul. And so it's just been kind
right.
of a...
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. And then I did their festival in mm-hmm. August out in Montana. And they all sat in because I couldn't bring the band. So Chris Funk and Jenny Conley and Nate Query, I think is how you say his last name. They all sat in for, like, a couple songs at the end. And so it's just so... It's such a weird full circle thing. I would never have thought I would meet them, because when I was big and obsessed in college and saw them live and stuff, I wasn't even performing yet. It was such a different time in life, and it's just really weird to know them as people now.
That is amazing.
That's the weirdest thing I think that's happened, besides all the other weird things. It's like that was just like, what is happening right now?
Oh,
it's fun though.
Yeah, I bet, and maybe they were that. That's really cool. And you've done so. One other thing I was curious about, I think you mentioned you do a lot of speaking engagements as well.
Yes.
Did you say that you spoke at the State Department? Is that, did yep. I hear you say that?
Yes.
On stage?
Yes.
How did that happen?
That was random. I actually don't really know how it first happened. I think they requested that I come out there and talk a little bit about disability rights, and I don't know who found out that I do that, or, you know, I actually don't know, but we got a request. And so in 2017, I went out there and did a speaking engagement, and that's when I met the guy who challenged me to write a song about diplomacy, essentially. There's a saying in diplomacy that the secret to diplomacy is being willing to meet in the middle of the last 3 feet. And so I wrote a song called The Last 3 Feet, and it's sort of about forgiveness / diplomacy. It's sort of morphed into its own thing, but I got to play it. I went back there in September and spoke again and played that new song that was inspired by my State Department visit. So I've been there twice now. And it's really weird because in the age of, we don't have to get into politics, but it's a weird time to be at the State Department, except for that I realize when you meet those people, those are the real deal. Those diplomats are, it's not about a party thing. A lot of them are there for 30, 40 years, and they really just want to promote human rights and freedom and, like, disability rights and all sorts of things, like preventing human rights violations all over the world, and doing that through allies and getting to know the cultures that they're in and build relationships. So they're really cool people. Whatever you think of the politics of today, they're kind of above all of that. And at least the career people that actually go into the countries, I have a lot of respect for what they do. Mm-hmm. Switzerland happened because I went over kind of through an arts envoy through the State Department to participate in a disability music group. And so the State Department was kind of hosting us over there, and we got to know a bunch of people there too. And it's true everywhere that I've met people who are involved in the State Department. I have a lot of respect for what they do. It's pretty cool.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you've had so many opportunities. Thanks for sharing that with us today, and congratulations on the new album.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And we have time for one more. You said you were going to do the finished tune, which I'm not even going to try and say the name of it.
It's called Metsäkukkia.
Metsäkukkia. Okay,
and it means forest flowers. So here we go. Just making sure all the buttons are right on the looping pedal. Thank you.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much, Galen.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me in.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Emma Gilhausen, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening. Thanks again to Galen Lee for coming in today. And you're going to be around for a little bit. Is this the longest time you've been home for a while? It kind of seems like it, but I...
Yeah, the next two breaks, we're home until, like, December 5th, and then we go to the UK until right before Christmas, and then we're home for almost a whole month. That will be the longest, like Christmas till January 20th or something. I'm really excited.
Yeah, well...
See people.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see you around, and you said you might have a show at Dovetail Cafe in January.
Yep,
got something in the works there.
Yeah.
All right, well, looking forward to that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
It is 1:49, and stay with us. We will be live from Studio A with Brianne Marie and the Front Porch Sinners in just a bit here, too, on this busy Wednesday before Thanksgiving here in the KUMD studio. Here's some Nick Drake now.